broadcasting live from Cadillac Bar in the Heights as part of ESPN Houston Summer Circuit.
Presented in part by our grand prize sponsor, Power On E-Bikes.
From the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Get out, see the boys, Cadillac Bar, happy hour every day, 11 to 7. Sunday brunch buffet, stations of omelets, tacos, waffles, pancakes, enchiladas, classic breakfast, lunch, and desserts. And as you can hear, fantastic music there at Cadillac Bar. So what has piqued your interest, day two Texans training camp? Titus Howard talked today, right guard, it looks like. And you know, he's talking about, which I was reading that the defense kind of had the edge in the offense today, for whatever that's worth. I think the defense is better than the offense just in general anyways. But Titus Howard was talking about like the mentality. You know, he thinks that this mentality of this offensive line is better. The mindset's in a better place, which, I mean, great. But talk is cheap, as we all know. The thing that jumped out to me, though, was like, hey, what does this offense look like? And this is the second time a Houston Texan player has said it. I forget who it was on Texans radio that said it in the past. But they alluded how it's very similar to an offense that they played in early in their Texans tenure, which you can put two and two together, and it's the Bill O'Brien offense. O'Brien, of course, New England. Kaylee spent time in New England. So I think that we're going to see a lot of elements that were similar to the Bill O'Brien offensive days back when Bill O'Brien was here. And the question that I have, is that good or bad?
Yeah, I'm with you. I when I heard it, I want to say I thought Nico had said something like that, but I'm not sure. Nico didn't play under Bill O'Brien, did he?
No, I don't think it was Nico. I think it was one of the I can't remember who
other
it was.
Linemen?
No, I can't remember who it was. I know it wasn't Nico, though.
Yeah, I heard it, and I was like, I cringed a little bit, going, is that what you really want? Do you want to go back to O'Brien? Do you want to go back to vanilla? Do you want to go back to – I get it that, you know, from an offensive mind that had experience and was in New England, and so he brought that to him as opposed to Slowik doing whatever he did and trying to create it for the first time as an OC. I heard that, and I wasn't too pleased about that. I'm like, from what we've heard prior to that and everything on Kaylee has been, look, I think this guy, you know, he's going to give you balance, but I think that he's got different ways he's going to attack, and he's going to capitalize on his personnel. And then I heard that today. I was like, I don't think I'm too jazzed about that.
I don't hate it. I think Bill O'Brien, like, as an offensive play caller is – pretty good. And look, there's going to be differences between O'Brien and Kaylee and their personality, and then maybe even their, like, genius, like, you know, their smarts, when to call things, their feel of when to call things. So I don't think it's the worst case in the world. And I think strictly as an offensive mind, Bill O'Brien's all right. Like, I don't think he's wonderful. I don't think he's McVay or Andy Reid. But I also don't think that he's bad. I think there's a lot of other things that Bill O'Brien I didn't like. Like, I didn't think he was great with, like, the culture stuff. I don't really care what he does publicly and how he talks to the media. That's beside the point. But if you go back and look at some of the offenses with Bill O'Brien, his first year, he was 14th in the NFL in total yards, and he did it with Ryan Fitzpatrick for 12 games, Case Keenum for two, and Ryan Mallett for two. Like, that's a successful season. The next season, they did drop off to 21st in the NFL. That's the year that Hoyer started most of the games, but even Mallett started four. T.J. Yates started two. Brandon Whedon started a game.
That's right.
So, like,
yeah,
the offense wouldn't be very good. The next year in 2016, it was one of the worst offenses in the NFL. It was 28th out of 32. That was the Brock Osweiler year. Started 14 games. It's amazing they won as many games as they did, despite the offense being as horrible as it was. The following year in 2017, they went 4-12. They had the 17th best offense in the NFL. That was Deshaun Watson's rookie year. Remember, that rookie year was cut short, and he actually looked pretty good in his six starts. 2018, the Houston Texans went all the way up to number 11 in total offense with Deshaun Watson starting 16 games. Looked spectacular. Deshaun Watson did. 2019, 14th best offense in the NFL. Deshaun Watson again, a pretty good year. And then O'Brien's final year only lasted four games, so that year you can kind of throw out with the bathwater. I don't think it's the worst resume in the world. I think that he had some decent offenses with some really bad quarterbacks. And Deshaun Watson looked like a really, really good quarterback under the tutelage. I hesitate using that word. Under the tutelage of Bill O'Brien.
Maybe so. When I think about, you know, even before you started rattling all that stuff off, I just wonder if he's one of those guys that his offense has gotten, I don't want to say archaic, but it's gotten it hasn't aged as well as some of like today's NFL when we're talking about kind of the up-tempo and all the different things that you see some of the better offensive minds, the McVays and the you know, O'Connells and guys like that. I maybe it's also because I'm a little tainted by the fact that I was never a Bill O'Brien fan, period. But I just feel like it was more kind of what's the word I'm looking for? It wasn't generic, but it was maybe conservative. But I didn't like hearing that.
I felt like it was pretty wide open with Deshaun. Like, you go watch some of these Deshaun games, and like they're going like four wide shotgun, throwing 50 times a game. Like, I think there was a lot of vanilla and conservative before Deshaun, but I think he opened it up once he got Deshaun. And plus, there's always going to be the involvement and the development. Like, you're never going to be doing something you did 7 years ago unless you're Bobby Slowick. So I also think that element comes into play, too. I don't think it's the worst case in the world.
No, but I also think, like, we saw with Deshaun, he was constantly in search of the big play. I mean, his biggest faults were that he was trying to make those big plays all the time, as opposed to just kind of getting down or taking what the defense gives you for a couple yards to get back to the line of scrimmage.
Something
to note is that when Deshaun went for over 5,000 yards, they still didn't crack the top 10 offense.
Trying to figure out like why that's correlated. The running game must have been awful. What year was that, Ryan?
Well, wasn't that where they were always playing 19, from behind too?
18.
He was throwing it all over the field because they were playing from behind in every game.
You said they didn't crack the top 15 in offense?
At least not the top 10.
Moving the goalposts there, Ryan. 2019, Deshaun Watson ran for 413 yards. He threw for 3850. So he didn't crack 5,000 in 19.
Then it must have been 18.
2018, he threw for just under 4,200 yards, and he ran for 550. So that's still under 5,000, but it's close. They were 11th that year, Ryan.
Don't go away now,
wrong.
Ryan.
I'm wrong. He never did. He got to 48-23 in 2020.
All right. Close enough. So 2020, where were the Texans' offense in 2020? That was as close as getting to 5,000. They were 18th that year, so that would back up your point. But that was also the year O'Brien was fired after four games. So, like, are we counting that for O'Brien or are we not? Like, I don't know. But I thought Deshaun Watson was pretty good under Bill O'Brien. And, look, this, again, like, personality's different. Their feel for when to call certain plays would be very different. It's more the foundation, really, of what the Texans are implementing. And Josh McDaniels has been a pretty good OC, you know? Like, I think that's the similar stuff that we're going to see as well. 713-780-ESP, go ahead.
No, and I was going to say the one thing that you do want, though, in a Bill O'Brien-style offense is a quarterback that gets a very quarterback-friendly coach. You know, and with O'Brien, with Brady, and being the quarterback's coach before he started calling plays, too, that's helpful to any quarterback. That's probably helpful to Deshaun. It would be helpful in this scenario if you get Kaylee to be similar in terms of, you know, and again, it goes to what D'Amico said, too, about catering to the talents and the position, the skill position players that you have. But, yeah, it just didn't excite me a whole lot.
Yeah. But second guy that's mentioned it. So I think we're going to see a lot of the same principles. So heads up. Prepare yourself. A texter, how do you think CJ is going to handle having to make decisions rather than specific throws? It sounds like Kaylee wants to have multiple options for receivers coming off the line.
I actually think he's going to be fine. I think that this is something that he has wanted. I think that he's an intelligent football mind, and he understands how to run an offense. He might go through some lumps early, but I'm not overly concerned.
Yeah, I think he'll excel. Like, look, there's still a segment of the football world that wonders if, you know, C.J. Stroud has a high level of IQ. I think he does. I think he has football smarts.
I
think that this is going to be a type of offense that he was going to excel in because I think he has feel. I think he has football common sense. So I like the idea of it. Now, if he sinks in this, because I do think it's a sink or swim season for Stroud, like if he sinks in this, then all of those conversations or narrative are going to be, you know, they're going to be firing off like alarms about C.J. Stroud.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's kind of what you said yesterday. We got to wait to see it. I just believe that he is an intelligent football mind. I believe that, you know, he studies the game, he studies the quarterbacks, and he knows that this is something that the best quarterbacks in the NFL did sooner rather than later, and then basically never didn't do it for the most part. And I think he wants to be that guy. I think he's fully capable. Yeah, from the people that are going to take the swipes and say they don't know if he's intelligent enough to do all that, I don't feel that way. I feel like he's going to be just fine.
Yeah, I do too. A texture seems like Stover and Stroud are hanging out a lot this year. Any shots Stover could steal Schultz's job, or is Dalton's contract too much of an albatross to bench? And I think they would bench him if Stover was better. I think both are going to play. I think Kaylee's going to want to play some two tight end stuff.
Yeah, and I think he likes the physicality of Stover, and I think the fact that he likes that big body tight end that can block, that can be physical, that can be even lined up in the backfield in the past, I think that's something that entices him. I don't know if Stover's going to be much of a pass catcher, and you've got two guys that can be, but I think he's going to utilize all three tight ends.
Yeah, I do too. All right, 713-780-ESPN. I have a question for you guys, because this kind of piqued my interest day two. Because D'Amico Ryans was talking a lot about this today. He's talking about, like, we want to get to the quarterback, but we want to land on the ball. We want to turn him over, which, you know, all defensive coaches want turnovers, right? But I want to throw this this hypothetical by you guys. Would you rather have the number one defense in the NFL, 10th in takeaways, or would you rather be number one in the NFL in takeaways and number 10 in defense? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Broadcasting live from Cadillac Bar in the Heights, as part of ESPN Houston's Summer Circuit.
Presented in part by our grand prize sponsor, Power On E-Bikes.
From the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's the Killer Bees, Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Do you prefer this version of it, Blankers? Alien Ant Farm? Smooth Criminal? Or do you prefer the Michael Jackson?
No, I do not. I'll do the Michael Jackson. I'll do the original. Don't mess with it. It's fine.
There's some hot takes that are out there that people like the Alien Ant Farm version more than the Michael Jackson version.
Well, to each his own.
Ryan, which version do you like?
Michael Jackson.
You said Ryan or Brian?
Brian. Eager. Eager Brian. What do you like, Brian?
I don't really like either version, to be honest with you.
Whoa, you're done. You're muted for the rest of the show.
That's fine.
You're out. He was pretty much muted to this point.
One did you want to talk to again?
Both are very, very good, I think. I like both of them myself.
Yeah, I think it's just a different kind of genre.
I'll go Michael Jackson, though. How could you go against Michael Jackson? Killer Bees at Cadillac Bar on Shepherd. Margarita Monday, $6 margaritas, $8 pitchers all day. $5 tacos on Taco Tuesday, of course. And then tomorrow, tequila and fajitas Friday, margarita pitcher, half pound of chicken and beef fajitas for just $39.99. Cannot beat it. Get out to Cadillac Bar. So I tease it going to the break there. If you could pick one scenario, you have the, because D'Amico Ryans was talking about this a lot today. I've heard a bunch of the defensive players talk about it a lot too. If you could pick a defense that's the number one defense in total yards, but number 10 in takeaways, or you can pick the number one defense in takeaways, but they're number 10 in total defense. Which of the two would you take?
That's a great question. I actually would lean towards the number one defense. I just feel like if you're the number one defense and still are in the top 10 in takeaways, that any team you're playing trying to move the football is going to be limited. And whether you get a turnover or not, you're going to win the field position battle, and you're going to be in a good position to win. I'll lean that way, but like I understand people on the other side of it. But if you got the number one defense in the entire league, you are suffocating, you are swarming, and you are dominating.
See, I'm going to disagree with you there, Joel, because I mean the drop off on like where you rank in yards is still not bad. I mean you're still 10th in the league, so you're not a defense that's giving up a lot of long drives and really impacting the game overall. The reason I would choose number one in turnovers is I think of the two options, that has the better chance to turn into points. Like, you lead the league in turnovers. Not only could some of those be returned for a touchdown, but you're also more regularly compared to, I think, the team.
I thought about where the turnover happens matters, right?
Well, it could be there's unknown in that. But, like, I mean, more often, like a team that's leading the league in yards allowed and forcing a punt is going to be – the offense can be starting with worse field position than a team that's forcing the turnover on average. I know it could change depending on where the turnover happens, but I think the turnovers turn into more points than the yards allowed.
Jeremy, where you at?
So I think that the turnover team's a little bit more volatile because you're a little bit more dependent on the turnover. So I think that your highs are higher, but I think your lows are lower. Whereas I think if you're number one in defense, 10 in takeaways, you're usually a little bit more consistent. But I think I like to ride the extremes a little bit more because if you hit that extreme, right, you hit the volatility on the high end, you can beat anybody in the league. I mean, you can beat anybody in the league if you have the number one defense too, though. I would – see, to me it's tough because if I'm number 10 in defense, what if I just run into a playoff game in the AFC Conference title game where I don't get the takeaways that day, you know? And the other teams all right. Say it's Kansas City at Arrowhead. I'm not getting the turnovers that day, and, you know, my defense is solid but not solid enough. Whereas if I have the number one defense and it's almost like it's not impossible to move the ball on any defense in the NFL, but like I have that top defense and I feel like my defense can win any single game, like that's pretty nice as well. I think I lean number one defense and number 10 takeaways, but it is very razor thin.
Yeah, and that's where I'm at too, in the fact that if you have the number one defense in the entire league, that means that whether you're getting turnovers or not, you're pinning them back, you're keeping them in their own area, on their own area of the field, and you're probably winning the position battle, the field battle. So I would feel really good about that.
I feel like it's just more volatile to have the number 10 defense and number one turnover. Like, I don't want to be dependent on turnovers for my defense to have a good day. I mean, number 10 defense, you're still not bad, right? You're still
Yeah, is that
solid.
Really that volatile if you're the number 10 defense in the league?
It's a lot different than number one.
Yeah, okay. Well, what's the – like? I mean, I'd be curious to know, like, what the difference this year, like, points allowed per game from the number one defense to the number 10. How much are we talking about? Is it a field goal? Is it 2 points? Like, I just don't see as that being – dropping all the way to 10, quote-unquote, as being something that makes your defense so much more volatile to where 1 week you're getting worked and the next week you're elite.
But the gap between the number one turnover team and the number 10 turnover team also is not going to be great. Like, you
Fair.
Know what I mean? Like, it's
sure.
Let me pull it up here. Takeaways, number –
It was about
number
5
one
points.
Number one team last year in takeaways was Minnesota. They had 33. Number 10 was Detroit. They had 24. So that's like a half a turnover a game. Like, that's not – I mean, that's drastic, sure. That's substantial, but it's not this crazy amount. Ryan, you said it was a 5-point difference between
yeah.
the number one total defense
the number
and
one,
number 10?
The number one total points scored defense had was the Chargers at 17.7, and the number 10 was the Green Bay Packers at 22.
Okay, that is a pretty small thing. That's a pretty small number. I think the math on this made me reverse my decision. Because 5 points is less than – I mean, it's less than a touchdown. I mean,
right.
I don't know. That's still pretty significant. 5 points is a lot.
It's – but, yeah, I just – I mean, I understand the and I love the enticing thing about turnovers. I just feel like if you're the number one defense in the entire league, that's true dominance. That's you know, shutting down run, that's shutting down pass, that's pressuring the quarterback, and that's putting you in a position seemingly with a shorter field more times than not, as opposed to, you know, when you get the pick, but do you get the pick down on, you know, as they're going, you know, as a team is going in to score and you still got to go the length of the field? I don't know.
Yeah,
it is close.
It is close. The techs are saying that number one defense isn't yards, it's points. There's different schools of thought on that, but usually the default total defense is yards, not points given up.
Think about it like this. How good is your offense in that situation?
It right? depends on where you get the ball. Like, I mean, if you get the ball closer to the goal line, you have a better chance to score points.
But
like, that was Brian's point, is that if you create turnovers, you're going to have a better field position on average.
If your offense is constantly scoring, though, wouldn't you feel better having the ball more often than if it wasn't?
I mean, I wouldn't say that you're going to have the ball more often. Like, a turnover is an end of possession. Like, your defense is eventually going to have an end of possession as well, whether you're forcing a punt or you're giving up a point. Like, I think it leads to more possessions, per se.
I think that if you have the number one defense in all of the league, I think that's exactly what we talked about as a potential scenario for the Texans, where your defense is so dominant that it can win you football games because of the fact that the other team, no matter who they have on the other side, can't do anything with it. And you have a capable enough offense to score points.
But kind of like last year's Texans, where we were getting the ball in a plus field possession a lot, but we were just turning it into field goals instead of just getting more and more touchdowns, right? Where if you had an offense who was scoring a lot, just naturally, you'd want the more possessions, give them the ball more, instead of having a defense that is just absolute stout.
Yeah, I mean, look, and again, I think it's to each his own. I think you can look at it from either perspective, and you can make a really good argument. I just look at it and say, and I think about those defenses when you think about when even, you know, the 85 Bears going way back, but their defense was so dominant, the number one defense in the league, that their offense had a less than type quarterback and offensive setup, and they still they dominated the league. I think with Baltimore, the same thing. You know, their offense was nothing to write home about, but because they had the number one defense in the entire league, and I don't know if they also led the league in turnovers, but I'm just saying when you're number one, that to me means that you are, like, stifling, and that wins you football games. And it seems like that's what the Texans would love to do with D'Amico.
So last year, Minnesota and Pittsburgh last year, they led the NFL in takeaways. Like, they're both playoff teams, right? Like, very,
yep.
very good.
Yep.
The top defensive team last year in terms of yards given up, not takeaways, Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, see, I'll take the Eagles defense. Yeah.
Now, number two and three were the Titans and the Jets, though. Number four was the Dolphins. So, like,
what, two and three were what? Titans and who?
The Jets.
Titans and Jets.
Oh.
So didn't really get you anywhere.
Yeah. Like if you just go top five takeaways last year, you got Pittsburgh playoff team, Minnesota playoff team, Buffalo playoff team, Green Bay. They made the playoffs last year? I forget.
Yeah,
they did.
And then Houston, number five playoff team. If you go total yards, Philadelphia won the Super Bowl. But then you go Titans, had the number one pick of the draft. Jets fired their coach. The Dolphins missed the playoffs. And then Green Bay was actually number five as well. And they made the playoffs. Houston was six, for what it's worth. So
number one won the playoffs. Number one won it all, Brian. That's the answer.
You're forgetting that three of the five didn't make the playoffs?
It doesn't matter what the other teams are, Brian.
Right.
I'm only talking about number one.
Doesn't matter, Brian.
Division right,
champs,
Brian.
AFC South champs, champs 2 years
right,
in a row,
Brian.
Yeah.
Super Bowl champs, Brian, number one.
Keep from L.A., if you have the number one defense, there's turnovers coming with that also, so you're going to get the ball. I would be happy with either one of them. That's probably the truest statement there.
Yeah.
Ryan's right, says a texter with a thumb emoji. Tampa did too. And then texter says, I know it's not the original question, but I'll take the number one offense and number 10 in giveaways over the number one defense and number 10 in takeaways. Huh. Yeah, I would too. I would prefer my offense to be better than my defense in the NFL. I think it matters more these days.
Yeah. I mean, then you don't have to rely on them, but they complement each other, and you believe in either side of the football as opposed to needing your defense to win you games.
Would you rather have the number one scoring offense or the number one scoring defense?
Scoring offense for sure.
It was blankers. I was directed towards blankers, Ryan.
Ryan is really feeling good today. I would say scoring, because I think that if you have the number one scoring offense, you're going to put up a boatload of points, and I think most teams are going to be playing catch-up.
Yeah, I'm going to go offense too, just because of the modern NFL. I think it's more suited to offense than it is defense. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP, listener line. Who are the teams under the most pressure in the NFL this year? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. You're in the market for a new vehicle, listen up. Or it could be pre-owned, too. Monument Chevrolet is the dealer you can trust. Transparent, no-hassle pricing. They are the best. They've been serving the Houston area for 50 years, so they got a bit of a resume behind that best title as well. They've helped generations of families get into new vehicles, and these families keep coming back because they trust the fine people at Monument Chevrolet. Family feel, friendly atmosphere. They hire great people, so they have a fantastic culture. And look, hey, school's going to be here before you know it. Little kids, big kids alike, school is just around the corner, which may mean your teenager needs that first car. A life-changing experience, as we all know. And the new possibilities like driving to school, driving to work, maybe. Freedom and open road. Parents, Monument Chevrolet wants that experience to be first class and to help you get your driver on the road in a quality, safe vehicle with a huge selection of pre-owned vehicles. And guess what? A 6-month, 6,000-mile limited warranty to prove they back up what they say. No limits at Monument Chevrolet, and that's backed up with a guarantee. Get a fair deal, a fast deal, an easy deal without wasting your time and aggravating stressful negotiations. This week's car of the week, by the way, how about the EV Blazer, the 25 EV Blazer, 0% APR for 36 months right now at Monument Chevrolet. No tricks, no time wasting, no hidden charges. If you've been waiting to upgrade your ride, now is the time to do it. Visit them online at monumentchevrolet.com, monumentchevrolet.com, or go visit them in person, 225 and Bellway 8 at Monument Chevrolet. Chevrolet, together, let's drive.
ESPN 97.5.
You're back with the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from Cadillac Bar in the Heights as part of ESPN Houston's Summer Circuit.
Presented in part by our grand prize sponsor, Power On E-Bikes.
From the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Cadillac Bar, best fajitas in the Houston area. They're premium black Angus beef. It is delicious. And if you're a frugal guy, you're a frugal lady, you like some savings with your fajitas, I get it. Tequila and fajitas Friday. Take advantage of that tomorrow night. Margarita pitcher plus a half pound of chicken and beef fajitas for less than $40, $39.99. A great offer at Cadillac Bar. So get on out there. Boys will be there until 6. Get on out there any day of the week. Always something going on. Got a great happy hour, too. 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. A little Tex-Mex happy hour. Nothing beats that. Why? Margaritas are the best happy hour. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP, listener line. 713-780-3776. Texture says that the Titans the Titans were so good defensively because opposing teams only had to go 30 yards to score on the Titans. Fair.
That's probably true.
It's fair. Starting field position matters. I actually think the Titans are going to be better than people think this year, though. I'm a bit bullish on Cam Ward, which, hey, last time I was bullish on a Titan quarterback, it didn't work out. So maybe you shouldn't trust me. But I really like Cam Ward. Like him a lot. And you pair him with the Callahan, who's an offensive-minded coach. I don't hate their pieces. I kind of like Pollard. I kind of like Spears. Calvin Ridley had a big year last year with bums at quarterback. I think they're going to be a tough team to beat. Not a playoff team, but a tough team to beat week in, week out.
I don't believe year one they're going to be a tough team to beat. I think their defense is pretty good. I think it's interesting, too. Did you see Cam's response when they asked him about Levis being out for the year?
I did.
Yeah, he got kind of chippy and went, I don't have something to the effect of, I don't need to worry about anything but Cam.
Yeah,
like, okay.
That's kind of who he is, though. That's like who he is. Because I remember whenever he was doing the stuff with Shador, and like he's like, "Why are you on your phone, man? Why do you have all that jewelry, man?" And like he's about it. Like he's the first one in the building, last one to leave. Like everything that I like read on Cam, obviously watched Cam in college. I'm a fan of the guy. I don't love that he's in the division. I'll be honest.
Really? Okay. It'll be interesting to see.
Like, yeah. I don't think the Titans are going to be a juggernaut, but I think Cam has a chance to be really good. I think Cam Ward, not that it's like this massive bar, but I think Cam Ward could be the second-best quarterback in the AFC South next year. Next year.
Ooh.
I mean, it's not a high bar.
Okay.
He has to clear Lawrence. Like, it's not a high bar.
Yeah.
Like, he might clear Stroud. Well, who's to say he's not to clear Stroud?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to watch it play out. I think that he could develop into a really good quarterback in this league. I'm just curious to see how quickly he grasps everything and how, you know, you say the work that he's putting in and how that actually translates to him on the field in year one. I think that he'll struggle in year one, but I do think that in the big picture scenario, I think he can be really good.
I think there's a chance he has a Stroud Daniels rookie year.
Ooh.
I'll say individual success, because I don't think that the pieces around the Titans good as – look, I didn't think the pieces around Stroud in year one were very good, and they fooled me. Like, they proved me wrong. I thought the same thing last year with the Commanders. I was like, yeah, that's not a great roster. They proved me wrong. But I could see Cam Ward having the individual success of those two guys. I have a hard time seeing the Titans having the team success that the Texans had 2 years ago and the Commanders had last year. NFL top 100, they leaked out two more players. Number 64, Bo Nix. This kind of just continues to back up my point that they are overrating quarterbacks, which I understand. Quarterbacks are very good, but I just wouldn't call Bo Nix the 64th best player in the NFL. And then speaking of the division, Josh Hines Allen, he threw the Hines in, so he'd not be confused with that guy who's never going to win a Super Bowl in Buffalo. But Josh Hines Allen, the 63rd best player in the NFL, according to players around the league that were polled for this.
I mean, the Bo Nix where he is interests me because I'm just curious where CJ falls on this list. Because if Bo Nix is there, I still believe CJ's got to be a heck of a lot higher on the list. And I'm intrigued by that. But you're right. It's obviously a quarterback-driven league, and everybody's going to be driving the quarterbacks up. Where's Baker going to be on this list? Baker's going to be really high because he had a great year last year.
Top 50? Like, but I mean, I feel like top 50 feels low, though. Like, if Nix is 64,
it does.
I think Baker would be, like, top 30.
I think Baker's inside the top 30. I was thinking more like around 25 to maybe even flirting with low 20s.
Yeah. It's tough for me, though, because, like, again, like all these quarterbacks that I've seen, I feel like are overrated. So I have a tough time, like, predicting where these quarterbacks are going to land, because every single time I see a quarterback pop up, I'm like, okay, that's too high. Okay, that's too high. Tua's in the top 100. That's too high. So it's tough for me to predict where the quarterbacks are going to land on this list. I think top 30 is probably going to be accurate.
All right, I wonder how many total quarterbacks are going to be on that list.
How many have there been already? Like five?
Yeah.
I think Tua was the first quarterback, right? Tua was the first quarterback in the top 100 that was leaked out.
Okay.
So if Tua, like, where do you have Tua ranked in your quarterback pedestal, I guess?
Probably like 16?
Tua was 91. So Tua was the first quarterback listed, like as they do the backwards reveal 100-1. He's 91.
If I go as high as I could go with Tua, it's 15, 16-ish, but I don't really feel strongly that that's where he belongs.
Same.
That's why I think there's going to be a boatload of quarterbacks on this list.
No, I think you're right. I think it's going to be in the high teens.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be 16 or 17.
Probably right.
That's a lot. Like, Tua's not a top 100 player. I'm sorry. Sam Darnold's not a top 100 player. I'm sorry.
And when we talk about, like, how – and you can look at it from a salary perspective, too, but you look at the importance, and salary sometimes plays into that. But how many great receivers are in this league? How many great defensive backs now are in this league? Like, next to quarterback, I think that those guys deserve to be on – there's a lot of talent there. But I think that we're always going to overvalue quarterbacks, and that's why there's going to be probably too many on this list.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. All right, which teams in the NFL are facing the most pressure this season?
Are you asking me now?
Yeah, what do you think?
I think first and foremost, see, I'm going to say one, and Brian, before Brian can say it to me, but I won't say them right off the top. I think Dallas, simply because of the fact that you've got a coach that's never done it before, and Jerry Jones' expectations are always way too high. The Parsons situation's interesting, too, but they did go out and finally add another piece that plays into the puzzle. But I don't see Dallas being what a lot of people think they're going to be, even in the division. But I definitely don't think them as a Super Bowl contender. Yeah. And I think that because the spotlight is always so bright on the Cowboys, I think there's a lot of pressure there.
Can I push back on why I don't think there's much pressure for them, though?
Yep.
What's going to happen if they stink? Jerry Jones is going to keep doing the same old stuff.
Fire the coach. And
after 1 year?
Yeah, like, I just don't think there's a whole lot of pressure in Dallas because, like, they weren't great last year. Jerry Jones isn't going to fire himself. He's not going to fire Stephen Jones. He likes to hire coaches that he can control out of nowhere. So, like, even if they fire him after a year, he's just going to go find somebody like him. Like,
as quickly as Brian said that, the rebuttal to that is, do you think he really worries about money when he could sign these guys early and save himself tens of millions of dollars? Instead, he just lets it go way too long and ends up paying 10 or 20 million more?
I didn't say the 1 year remark because of Jerry Jones worrying about money. Certainly he's not, as he's proven. I just say that because of how long of a leash he gave guys. Like his last two coaches before this, I think the public had moved on from them before Jerry, like, 2 years before Jerry was willing to.
But McCarthy was a name, and the fact that when you're looking at a guy like this that's never done it before, I don't think he's going to have any remorse or any, you know, like, unwillingness to pull the trigger after a year and go, yeah, he was the wrong guy for the job. We're going to get somebody else.
Look, I don't think Jerry
cares about money. And I don't think he's paying him a lot either.
But it's not about money.
Like, it's not about money, yeah.
It's a salary cap league.
Right. What I'm saying is, from a coaching perspective, he's not going to have any scruples moving on after 1 year of Brian Schottenheimer.
No. I was talking about the signing players to extensions. Like, waiting on Parsons and waiting on other players doesn't cost him more money. It costs him a bigger percentage of the cap. Like, it's foolish from a roster construction point of view. The money he spends on the rosters is equal regardless.
Well, but my point being, if the number one paid defensive pass rushing player at the time when he could start talking to Parsons is at whatever level, and by the time he drags his feet and keeps pushing the can down the road, by the time he actually gets to it, that number one player salary has changed, and it's probably a lot higher dollar figure.
Sure, but that
for the totality of the
but that impacts the quality of the roster. That doesn't impact the money he's going to spend. Like the salary cap in the NFL this year is $279 million. The Cowboys are going to spend roughly $279 million. So waiting on Parsons doesn't mean that Jerry Jones is going to spend more money It means that he's going to have a lesser team because the player is taking a bigger chunk, a bigger percentage of the salary cap.
My point was I just don't think he doesn't care about how much he's spending. So if however many years Schottenheimer signed for, if he cuts him after year one, he's not going to be worried about if he's still paying him. It's just, like you said, it's the principle of getting a guy that he believes is better suited to carry this team no matter what the price tag is.
I don't even know if it's that. I don't think he hires coaches with the idea that this guy gives me the best chance to carry the team.
Okay. I just think the same way that he's carelessly stupid, I think, in the way that he waits to sign his players, I think that he's also going to be very, very disconcerted with the fact that if Brian Schottenheimer doesn't work out in a year's time, that he would move on from him.
You no think he would if he stinks?
Yes.
So he wouldn't be pod committed to it? So
no, I think if Schottenheimer
on the coach.
Yeah, again, that's kind of where I'm coming from, is the fact that if they suck this year and everybody was, I think, way off their rocker thinking that there's a chance they go to the Super Bowl. Yeah. But if they really are awful, I think he has no problem at all getting rid of them after 1 year.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I don't think that he has issues spending money at all. I think he's willing to throw money into the Dallas Cowboys. You just can't do that in a salary cap league. Which, like, the foolishness of the Micah Parsons stuff or players in the past is now you're paying them more money, which is taking up a bigger percentage of the cap, which does what to the rest of the team? You can spend less money on the rest of the team, hence less quality players. All right, which NFL teams are under the most pressure in 2025? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Houston's independent voice for sports, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. You're listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from Cadillac Bar in the Heights as part of ESPN Houston's Summer Circuit.
Presented in part by our grand prize sponsor, Power On E-Bikes.
From the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Best fajitas in the Houston area. Premium black Angus beef. Sizzling best fajitas in the Houston area. 713-780-ESPN. Which team's under the most pressure this season, 2025? I'm going to go with Miami. I think Miami's under a ton of pressure, and it's kind of a make-or-break year. Because if it goes bad for Miami, I think that Mike McDaniel gets fired. Yep. I think there's a chance that Tua could be out of a starting quarterback job in Miami. It could be the last time we see Tyreek Hill in Miami as well. If they're bad, I could see Miami totally blowing it up down in South Beach.
Totally agree with you. And again, you got, and it's not, it's even starting out with like juicy soap opera like stuff. Like Tua and Tyreek Hill are working on their relationship.
I mean,
you look at that. You look at the fact that McDaniel has been less than his own players were critical of him even last year. This little mad scientist offensive mastermind, and it just hasn't been able to do enough that, yeah, I think a lot of eyes are watching on that because it could implode in a hurry.
Yeah, it could. Brian, who's at your forefront of your mind whenever you look at the most teams with pressure in the NFL? I word vomit.
Dolphins were definitely on my list. I eventually came up with four, but the other team that was at the very top, and it's kind of funny because the Mike McDaniel came from the tree of this coach, of this team, but it's the 49ers. Like, the 49ers have, for how long, been kind of thought of as that most talented roster in the NFL. Kyle Shanahan's been the genius forever, even though he's been in the position to win a Super Bowl, what, three times?
Yeah.
Or once as a coordinator, twice as a head coach. And they've had leads in the fourth quarter. Each of those times, they've blown it. So I think the 49ers with a roster that's getting a little bit older, they lost Debo, Kittle's getting up there. Ayuk, we don't know where he's coming back from injury. Like CMC, he could be one play away from his career ending. I think there's a lot of pressure to finally break through for the 49ers, or this could blow up.
I
could easily see it. Yeah, I definitely think this is the big turning point year for Kyle Shanahan and for the Niners. Hufanga is gone on the defensive side.
Yeah, so is the linebacker. I forget his name.
Dre Greenlaw.
Yeah, Dre Greenlaw.
They're looking for Saleh to kind of rejuvenate the defense yet again, but he doesn't have the pieces he once had. You're curious about Bosa and the defensive line. I definitely think that's a call. They were a little lower on my top 10 list of that, but they're definitely on my list. I think the one that we're missing right off the top is the one that comes with all the drama in the world. I think Pittsburgh is going to be everybody's going to be watching the Steelers all year, and NFL's going to jam them down your throat because of Rodgers. And you know, you just signed Watt to all that to the big contract. You do have a lot of weapons on defense. They're trying to give him more weapons. Jonnu Smith getting some guys to kind of even fortify more the offensive side of the football. I think the Steelers could be in for a really hard, quick fall, but I think that everybody's going to be watching the drama.
I just don't think the pressure is that high for them. Like, I kind of disagree with that. Like, I would go Cincinnati with the most pressure in that division. Like, you have Burrow in his prime, Chase in his prime. Like, you should be making deep playoff runs. Like, do we really expect the Steelers to be making a deep playoff run? Like,
I think the expectations
for them would be playoffs, right?
Not for Tomlin,
I don't
though.
Think so.
You're looking at Baltimore, Kansas City. You're looking at Buffalo, and Pittsburgh's going to have a deep playoff run.
But Jeremy, you're thinking who is doing the projecting here? Because I think the general public thinks with Rodgers on that football team, their offense is better than it's been in the last couple of years, and because of the fact that they've tried to add some pieces, that their defense is super good, and it has that's been their calling card. You give them a better quarterback with a better chance to be better offensively, I think that it's not just making the playoffs. I think that's at least a one playoff win, if not, some people may think, more grandiose. I look at it, and I don't believe in Rodgers anymore, as you guys know, and I don't think that it's going to end well, but I totally understand because he's better than what they've had.
He's better than what they had. I don't know how anybody looks at that team and is thinking deep playoff run. Like, I do not see it. Like,
I would classify the pressure, though, as
the last two
different
years in New York.
Yeah, but I'm not saying deep. I'm just saying when we talk about who's under the most pressure, I think Tomlin is under pressure because just making it and just staying away from a losing record, I think that ship has sailed. Everybody's like, yay, but we need to do more.
Tomlin
and now,
is fired? If they go 10-7 and lose in the wild card round, Tomlin's getting fired.
I think there's a chance. Yeah,
I disagree.
Okay,
agree to disagree on that one. What other teams did you have, Brian?
No, you guys mentioned the other two. Yeah, the Steelers and the Bengals.
A few from the text line. Did Bengals improve their defense? They drafted a guy in the first round, but he doesn't want to go there. Their best defensive player is holding out. So. No, the Bengals did not improve their defense.
Did they improve it? Yeah, no.
Texture says Buffalo. I think Buffalo's a great call. Like, Josh Allen has done everything in his life except get to a Super Bowl, win a Super Bowl, and then the same thing for McDermott. Like, if McDermott has a dud of a season, he's gone. Like, he's fired. I would have Buffalo way higher.
Isn't Lamar and the Ravens on that list, too, because he's done everything he could do regular season? They got an extra corner for him now. They keep trying to get him receiver help. Derrick Henry had a hell of a year that they got to get over the hump, too.
But the reason that I would have Buffalo ahead of Baltimore, both in that category, sure. Like, you know, I'm not really, you know, banging on the table here. But the reason that I would have Buffalo with more pressure than Baltimore is because I think Harbaugh is completely safe. Like, I don't think Harbaugh's seat is hot at all. Whereas I think McDermott's seat is quite a bit warmer than Harbaugh's. So that's
why
Baltimore
that.
For me would be higher than Buffalo.
And you guys know me. I got to throw Green Bay on that list. Because I think that this is where the truth really starts to be told about Jordan Love. I think there's a chance Green Bay doesn't make the playoffs.
LaFleur is not hot at all,
LaFleur is not. It doesn't matter. I don't think the coach is in trouble, per se. But I think that you look at even Brian Gutekunst as the general manager, who was saying we're looking to elevate our roster to try and win it. And now already when camp starts, what I meant by that was I'm trying to make us a deeper team so that we can make at least a deeper run in the playoffs. He's already back. Walking it back, and I think that the real Jordan Love, when he stands up, ain't going to be great. I think there's a chance Green Bay doesn't make the playoffs.
How much of the injury with Jordan Love last year do you think impacted his season?
I think maybe for the first couple weeks, I think maybe he came back too soon, but I think by the end of the season, it had nothing to do with the injury. It had everything to do with the fact that he was making bad decisions and that he was throwing balls up for grabs.
Fair enough. You pick Miami, no one expects them to have a deep playoff run. No one expects Miami to have a deep playoff run, but if they don't make the playoffs, everyone's gone. Like, they're all gone.
Is it Greer, the GM? Yeah, because the GM and coach will be gone there.
Yeah, I think so. Cincinnati says another texture. Atlanta, if Kirk starts. No one thinks Kirk's going to start, do we?
No.
Like, that's Pinnix's team. Is Kirk Cousins on the Falcons week one of the NFL season?
I mean, if they can't find a home for him, they got to pay him. He ain't going to – I mean, I don't think they'd cut him.
No, I don't think they'll cut him either. Like, the only thing would be a camp injury. We almost had one today.
Kirk Cousins
was almost
the toe hurt around the world.
One that hasn't been talked about, Pittsburgh Steelers. Yeah, we just talked about it. 49ers are under pressure to perform, says Mimi. Yep. Yeah, I think we covered up the other one. There's a lot of good ones.
Is Detroit on that list simply because they lost both coordinators and there's a lot of pressure to be able to kind of have guys that pick up where Ben Johnson and Glenn left off?
I think it's a good call. Like, I think their pressure's a little bit, like, I mean, obviously less. But if they go like 11-6, are people mad? Like, if they go 11-6 and like losing the conference championship game.
See, that's the thing. Their players are already setting a tone that we've got to break through. We can't just be happy with having a great regular season and then looking like a good team in the playoffs that doesn't completely get there. Their players are starting to talk about it, and that coupled with the fact that you got two new coordinators, that could be false expectations.
Like, I think if they miss the playoffs, then it like certainly heightens that for sure. Giants, what do you think about them with the pressure? They're more security pressure to me because I mean they could clean house if they have another 3-14 season. They're firing Dable and Shane.
Yeah, I think you're right. As it relates to guys losing their job, coach and GM are gone. But as it relates to, is anybody believe the Giants are a playoff team? Because I certainly don't. I don't think they're close.
No. It's more about like job preservation there. Like different pressures for different teams. Like Buffalo, sure. Baltimore have pressure of like going deep. Cincinnati, yep. Pressure going deep. Miami, New York, they have pressure of, like, keeping guys' jobs. Chicago, see, I don't think Chicago's under much pressure. I think they have a little bit of a runway.
I don't think the team does,
and I think, you know, you got Ben Johnson for locked up for years. I think Caleb is going to feel a ton of pressure if it's not going well because, you know, he put everything on the old coaching staff, the old regime, what he didn't get out of them, and had excuses, and I don't think he'll have any excuses this year.
Minnesota, how about them? Pressure watch.
I thought about it. I don't think O'Connell's going anywhere or his staff or anything like that. I just think it all rests on McCarthy's shoulders.
I think that's why they don't have pressure, though, because they're starting a guy playing for the first time in the pros.
Exactly. Like, I think he gets a runway. I think J.J. McCarthy gets a runway.
Probably
like,
so.
Last year, they went 14-3 last year. If they go 10-7 and McCarthy's, like, trending up, like, let's say McCarthy has an average year. He has an average year, but he finishes strong, right? Like, he starts off below average, he finishes above average. Even if they lose four games more than they did a year ago, I think Minnesota's feeling pretty good about this.
Yeah, I think they know that it's not only that they have hope again, but they have hope long-term. Because now, instead of doing the Darnold experiment and then knowing it was just a rental, now you've got a guy for the foreseeable future that's going to lead your team, and you still have Justin Jefferson.
Yeah. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP, listener line. Bad Take Boulevard coming up next. What are the worst takes of the week? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN, 97.5, ESPN, 92.5. The worst take of the week is buying a basketball goal from a big box store. If you truly want a great goal for your driveway, for your house, wherever, your backyard, it needs to be from Pro Dunk. They make the highest quality basketball goals you'll find. You're not going to get it at the big box store. The rim's going to stay intact, unlike the other ones. The backboard is solid. You're not going to have to worry about it breaking down like all the other goals you see around. Tempered glass backboard with the goals there at Pro Dunk gives you that true, authentic feel that you see at the pro gyms, the college gyms. Stainless steel hardware. It's rust-proof, which is must-have in Houston. They have a breakaway rim, which is critical because it's height adjustable. You can raise it all the way up to 10 feet. You can lower it all the way down to 5. You can relive your glory days, and that goal can adjust from anywhere from 5 to 10 feet. Thor, one of their goals, you can raise and lower it with a drill. It's their lightning adjust feature. Mention the range, 5 to 10 feet. They can get there with that lightning adjust feature in a matter of seconds. Easy to do, fun to do. Their accessories, top notch. LED light kits for night play. Look, it's really hot in Houston. You might want to wait to play until the sun goes down. I understand. You're at work all day. You can only play when the sun goes down. Well, if you get some LED light kits, you can play throughout the day, throughout the night. Backstop nets, pole pad lettering, and lots more. And you can order all all of this online at ProDunk.com, including professional installation. That's right. The pros from ProDunk professionally install your goal at the perfect height, perfectly straight. You're not going to mess it up because the pros at ProDunk will do that work for you. Give them a call at 281-351-9822, 281-351-9822, and visit ProDunk.com. That's ProDunk.com.
ESPN 97.5.
Please stand by.